Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Is it a coincidence that Jeff Blair has covered two perfect games? Or should Dennis Martinez and David Cohn be giving him the full credit he deserves? This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
My house in Budapest, my hidden treasure chest. Golden grand piano, my beauty focus EOU.
All right, we are back. Omar Minaya, special advisor to Tony Clark, executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association, will join us at 10:15. We'll talk about his transition from Major League Baseball executive. He is former Expos and Mets GM and former senior VP of the San Diego Padres. We'll talk about his transition to advisor for Tony Clark. And then Michael Lee, the national basketball writer for the Washington Post, he'll join us at 10:40. We'll get you set for tomorrow night's game between the Raptors and Washington Wizards, which we'll have in Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Sportsnet 360. Of course, the Raptors also playing tonight against the Brooklyn Nets, but that game against the Washington Wizards is something as a measuring stick for this team at this time. The Toronto Blue Jays made a couple of minor, and I mean minor, acquisitions yesterday, adding right-handed pitcher Ronald Belisario and shortstop Ramon Santiago to the competition for roster spots. And as I said, if you see Ramon Santiago around the Blue Jays this year, it means something bad has happened. It's kind of like Munenori Kawasaki. John Paul Morosi is a national baseball writer for Fox Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. Of course, I know you're already doing that, so it's kind of not even really mentioning the Twitter handle, because if you're a baseball fan, you follow him anyhow. How you doing, Mr. Morosi?
I'm doing very well, Jeff. My understanding was I was to come prepared, ready to discuss the Arizona Coyotes this morning.
No, we only do that in the first hour. That's WTF Leafs. What the Friday Leafs. We only do that in the first hour.
Okay.
Yeah, we only do that in the first hour. Or as several people have pointed out, what does WTF stand for? Today we have We the Futile. That's what somebody had the other day. Worse Than Farts was a new one today. Where's Tom Fergus? That one was repeated from yesterday as well. And We'll Trade. There was one I couldn't quite get, but it was a play on the words "we'll trade." Anyhow, whatever.
Yeah. How long until the trade deadline, Jeff?
Oh God, there's no such thing as a trade deadline in Toronto. Our life is one long trade deadline.
Okay.
Our life is one long trade deadline. It really is. This whole city is on a trade deadline. But thanks to The Economist, John, we now know that we are the most livable city in the world. Although, as several people have pointed out, we were chosen the most livable city in the world, and isn't this in fine Canadian fashion, because we weren't real bad in anything. We were kind of just outside the top 10 in a bunch of things and just inside the top 10 in a bunch of others.
Well, my feelings about Toronto, Jeff, are well established. I frequently, and as I've told you many times, I'm ready to move to Toronto tomorrow, as long as my wife just can sort of get grandfathered into the Canadian medical boards, we're all set. That's so far, that's kind of the non-starter here. But we'll continue those negotiations here ongoing, okay?
Well, God, you're on the station more than anybody else. I think you qualify for citizenship.
All right, I like it.
Can you pitch?
I'll take it.
Can you pitch in the ninth inning? That would be the other question, because if you can pitch in the ninth inning, we have a job for you.
Yes. And as you know, Jeff, that search remains very much ongoing, and as one pitcher after another goes off the board, the options obviously started to get limited. Although I will add on Belisario, I do think he's a guy that with his power sinker, obviously in that ballpark in Toronto, I think actually he's a good fit there. Mm-hmm. And I think Russell Martin is a guy that's going to be able to handle that power sinker. Not every catcher can. And I think with the way Russell Martin handles a staff, I think Belisario is actually a very good option for them. Can he close for a full time? Not sure about that, but certainly there was a period there with the White Sox last year where he was a pretty decent closer. So I think he's not a bad backup option, but I do agree with you. He is not. Do I see him throwing the last pitch of the season? Probably not. And I think the Jays at some point in time between now and at the very least the end of July will need to get a closer capable of doing that.
No, you're absolutely right. The one thing about this ballpark is if you're going to miss low, miss in the dirt. And Belisario is, you know, Alex Anthopoulos made it very clear early in the offseason that he was going to be looking at bounce back candidates as well, as indeed he should for the bullpen. And I think this guy is perfect for that. But you know who I'd forgotten about, and your colleague Ken Rosenthal wrote about him today. I have to admit, I just assumed he signed someplace. But Jabba Chamberlain's still out there.
Yeah.
He's 29 years old. He's still available. It's probably not going to cost a ton of money. What's up with him?
You know, it's a great question, and it's one that Ken wrote about today at FoxSports.com, and I think there's a certain degree of bewilderment throughout the industry about exactly what's going on with Jabba Chamberlain and why the Tigers haven't made more of an effort to re-sign him, given all of their bullpen issues. So the answer is, I think a lot of people don't even really know, Jeff. It's been a very quiet free agency for him. I've reached out to his camp before to ask for some information on that and have not heard back. So it's a very bewildering situation. And I'm not sure if because of that, I mean, who knows exactly where he's at from a standpoint of his physical readiness to pitch. It doesn't sound like he is top of the list for the Jays at this point in time. I do think that the more likely fits, and I was told this week, the Jays are still monitoring on multiple relievers, and I think that even that the signing of Belisario, especially to a minor league deal, hardly precludes them from pursuing others. And then the names I was hearing, Francisco Rodriguez, Rafael Soriano, Burke Badenhop, all on the list to a certain extent. So I've heard those names with the Jays much more than I've heard Jabba Chamberlain, who, as Ken wrote, there's just a certain degree of bewilderment throughout the industry about exactly what's going on with Jabba.
Now, and I know last year, David Dombrowski, and Ken refers to this in the article, last year there were reports that his mother was ill. I mean, there was some sort of fairly serious family matter, I think, that
right.
that the Tigers were frankly worried about. And a family, when I say family matter, people think of that as code for the guy was having, you know, was in some sort of difficulty. I think it was a family health issue.
Yes. Yeah, Dave was quoted as discussing something related to Jabba's mother's health. So I think that was the story on that, and Ken mentioned that in his piece today. So I think obviously, you know, one never knows. I mean, if Jabba wants to take a little bit more time off, you know, to be home more in Nebraska, that's certainly understandable and in fact admirable. So that's obviously something that could be in the back of his mind as well, and could be preventing him from jumping right in. I mean, he's a guy, obviously, when you're a veteran reliever of that age, you know, I think, roughly what it takes you to get ready for a season. And he's been around long enough to know that. So if he feels as though he can maybe take a little bit of a later start to his year, perhaps he'll do that and then maybe join somebody's camp midway through. But I think, to kind of get back to the Jays, they probably need, I think, Jeff, just a little bit more certainty back there. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard Alex mention the possibility of Sanchez maybe closing, or Cecil, which, you know, who knows, maybe both those guys or one of those guys could do it. But I think if you're really going to start this season at a time when, in my estimation, I know we've talked about this before, the American League East looks about as winnable as it's been for a long period of time, at least at the start of the season. And I think you've got to really take your best shot. This could really be the Jays' window to be a very competitive winning ball club in this division and make the playoffs again. And especially when you talk about, you know, Bautista, Encarnacion, two more years left on their deals apiece, I think it makes a lot of sense to really go for it this year and maybe round out that club. And it does sound like Alex has a little bit of flexibility left. So I would be really surprised, Jeff, if the Jays don't add a pitcher of K-Rod's caliber or Soriano's caliber or certainly Burke Badenhop, somewhere in that mix before that team reports to Dunedin.
In conversation with John Paul Morosi, the national baseball writer for Fox Sports, Dan Duquette was interviewed yesterday by Eduardo Encine of the Baltimore Sun. This was at a ticket holders function, I believe, in Aberdeen. It was in Aberdeen. It was their annual hot stove dinner at Ripken Stadium. Kind of the first lengthy interview Dan Duquette has given since the whole rumors of him coming to Toronto surfaced. We know, of course, that Paul Beeston, it was announced, will be back for this full season as president and CEO. Interesting interview, though. Dan Duquette absolutely said nothing about how long he plans to be with the Baltimore Orioles. Just reiterated that, as he said, I'm not used to being the subject of many trade rumors. He said he's been focused on helping the Orioles all winter. He pointed out that last year he didn't make any moves or many moves till right before spring training. So he said, from that point of view, I think I'm a little farther ahead than where I've been. Of course, Duquette's been criticized for not doing much. But there is no indication from him that he plans on being on seeing out that 4-year contract. I mean, he's very noncommittal on it. How much of an issue is this going to be for the Orioles through the season, John? And at some point, do you think the Orioles have to make, there has to be some sort of definitive public statement from the Orioles on where this organization is?
I think that when you talk about these two organizations, Jeff, I think the Orioles have a greater potential for there to be a distraction this year than the Blue Jays do, I think, of the two. I think with the Blue Jays, the situation is pretty obvious. Beeson's in his last year. Alex Anthopoulos is in his last year. Obviously, the search will be ongoing at some point in time during the season for Paul's successor. But I think everyone sort of knows what's going on in the Jays situation, or at least the general contours of it. Baltimore's situation, I think, is much more difficult. And this really, I think, again, I go back to what Ken Rosenthal has said about this. And Ken obviously has all those years of experience in Baltimore. The reality is, I think this situation did pass a point of no return where it was in the best interest of Peter Angelos to let Dan Duquette go, because there really had been this degree of acrimony within the organization about exactly what Dan Duquette was doing this winter time. And it's hard to get that back. It's hard to, it's hard to unring that bell.
Right.
And I think there's going to be a lot of distractions, I think, throughout the course of the season, maybe not to the extent that we saw with John Farrell in Toronto during his last year, when there had been the previous discussions with the Red Sox. But I think on a certain level, there's going to be distractions because of exactly what you said. He has withheld acknowledging that he's in this thing for the long haul, which is a very awkward place. And I'm not sure, Jeff, if it wasn't going to happen this winter, when there was all that apparent momentum and all that conversation where the Jays really wanted him, if it wasn't going to happen this winter, I'm not so sure that Dan Duquette's going to be a better fit or an easier transaction in the offseason this year. I don't necessarily see that as being, well, it's going to get done eventually. I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that there was so much into this, and the price the Orioles demanded was so high because of Peter Angelos' desire on this, that I'm not sure that this is ever going to be a workable solution.
We're going to be joined in a few minutes by Omar Minaya, who has just taken a position with the Major League Baseball Players Association as special advisor to Tony Clark. John, is this Tony Clark kind of starting to put his mark on the Major League Baseball Players Association and maybe get his leadership team in place going into negotiations?
I think so. And I think Omar Minaya, on a lot of levels, is a very, very good hire by the players' union. First and foremost, I talked to somebody with the union yesterday, and it was pointed out to me that, and maybe you can remember somebody else, Jeff, but it's very rare that you see somebody go from the club executive side directly to the union leadership side. That's a fairly rare career path. And I think in this case, obviously, Tony's background is as a player, which is different than what Michael Wiener's background was, the previous executive director of the union. And I think that it's a good play for him to sort of surround himself with people who are deeply experienced in the executive side of the game. And obviously he's got some attorneys, David Prouty, Rick Shapiro, who are at the hierarchy of that union that are going to be, I'm sure, having very lead roles in the next CBA negotiation. But I think Omar is outstanding because of the way that he understands the international nature of the game. And I think that's going to be a really key aspect of it. All his experience in Latin America, if MLB is going to try to push for a draft internationally, and if the union is still going to resist it on some level, there's nobody, really, and you know Omar from his years with the Expos, there's nobody in the game, I think, that has a deeper personal knowledge of scouting and operating in Latin America than Omar Minaya does. I mean, he has complete knowledge of that entire marketplace, And so I think especially with the international draft, you've heard Rob Manfred make comments already since he's come into office about how important the international draft is for him. That being the case, there's no better person to have at the MLBPA in that organization than Omar Minaya to discuss that very specific issue.
You know, and it's a great point. I also think, too, that you know, those of us who've covered baseball for a long time, we fell into a comfort zone with Rob Manfred and Michael Wiener, the late Michael Wiener, both, you know, A, because they're both, everybody in the game has a crap load of respect for both of them, or, you know, they're both terrific people and good negotiators. But John, there was always the sense, at least I would say for the past two collective agreements, that Rob and Michael were going to get something done. And it was, I mean, I remember it was announced at the World Series when it was almost, yeah, oh, by the way, we've agreed in extending the, we've agreed in a new collective bargaining agreement. I mean, it was almost done undercover almost. And I think there's some concern about, with the passing of Michael Wiener and Rob Manfred's move into the commissioner's office, I think there's some concern about the dynamics of the next round of labor negotiations, because I don't think Rob's going to be involved as commissioner, is he?
Well, I think, well, first of all, you're right about that. He's already indicated that Dan Halem is going to be his chief negotiator. And Dan Halem is a very well-respected individual within the commissioner's office, very well-versed in the labor relations side of things. And I think he'll be a very good choice for that role. I think his counterpart on the union side likely will be David Prouty, who is the chief counsel on the legal side with the MLBPA. So those are two new names for people to learn. Halem on the MLB side, Prouty on the MLBPA side in all likelihood. And I think it's interesting. I asked Tony Clark last spring, I happened to be in Jupiter, Florida when he was making his pass through there with the Cardinals, and he mentioned about labor negotiations that the goal is not labor peace. The goal is a good agreement for both sides, which I found very interesting, and I remembered and filed that one away ever since he said it. Now, I will say this. Despite there's this uptick in anxiety about the overall course of labor relations in baseball, this offseason, in comparison to the first two offseasons of the current CBA, there's been less talk about the free agent marketplace not working well. Remember last year there was those five guys that were still unsigned at this point in time?
Right.
Now it's really only one, James Shields, in terms of a guy that had a qualifying offer. So I do think the market is working better. Teams are getting more adjusted to this current agreement, and I think that maybe that has allayed some of these concerns about some sort of imminent labor issue. I think, first and foremost, Jeff, Rob Manfred and on the MLB side, and obviously his leadership group, and then Tony Clark on the union side, they've both got to realize this game now has record revenues. It's the only sport without a salary cap. There's a lot of really good things going on in baseball right now. And the one thing that I think would be disastrous for MLB is to take away that consistency they have of every night in the summertime at 7 o'clock, there's a game on your TV with all the talk about live sports and everything else. That's what it's got. Baseball has, above all else, its consistency in timing and rhythm. The only way you can screw that up is by having a labor dispute. So I think both sides are smart enough to realize that, or at least I hope they are, and we'll see how it goes. But obviously, I think you're right on, Jeff, that there is some degree of anxiety around the sport about exactly how it's going to go in the next round. But I do think there's going to be some very experienced people really at the forefront of those negotiations there in Halem and Prouty.
In conversation with John Paul Morosi, national baseball writer for Fox Sports, I wonder, because I wanted to talk to you about this as well, ticket sales once again going very well in Montreal for those exhibition games. I wonder if maybe having Omar Minaya in place, a guy who was general manager in Montreal when the Expos were run by Major League Baseball, a guy who came away actually saying very good things about Montreal as a city, I wonder if maybe this isn't a little bit of a boon. I'm not going to, look too far ahead and say baseball's returning to Montreal in the next 5 years, but it certainly can't help Montreal, or it can't hurt Montreal's cause to have Omar Minaya, involved in a fairly high profile, fairly highly accessible position if we ever do get around to discussing expansion or moving a team.
There's no question. And I think that as we talk about this, Jeff, there's a lot of information as it relates to Montreal and Major League Baseball that are nudging things in the positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think what you mentioned about Omar is a little nudge. Rob Manfred telling the New York Times on Sunday that it's possible baseball returns there. That's a little nudge. The ticket sales for another strong series in Montreal, another nudge. So, you know, the ongoing uncertainty about the situation in St. Petersburg, probably one more little nudge. That being said, I think there's still a long way to go in this process, and I think MLB is going to still want to give every chance for the Rays to stay in Tampa. And you know, there's always the possibility of expansion at some point in time as well. And it was interesting. Bud Selig even mentioned at the end of his term the possibility of international expansion. Do we get to a point where if they're going to expand to 32 teams, would it be one team in Montreal and one team somewhere in Latin America, whether it's Mexico or San Juan, or if a lot of things would have to happen, there's mm-hmm. a possibility of a team in Cuba, which I think is an interesting possibility. I don't think it's anywhere close to being a reality at this point in time. But I think the takeaway message and from talking to people in the game, Jeff, is Montreal, the people there, the potential ownership group, the way Evenco has promoted these events the last couple of years, Montreal is doing everything it can right now. Short of having that splendid stadium downtown already built and ready to go, they're doing everything they can. And I think the important thing that, as we talk about it, is Olympic Stadium, but because they've had to host obviously some MLS games there over time, the baseball facility now it's been revived at least on a short-term basis for these games. There's a place where they can go for a year or two, much like Washington had with RFK. And I really think the Olympic Stadium, from having been there for those games last year, Jeff, is no better or worse than Oakland or Tampa right now. Mm. So, I think MLB people realize that. So a lot of the things that have gone on there are trending in the positive direction, but we'll see if the rest of the bureaucratic and diplomatic things with the situation and the city council down in St. Petersburg and the ballpark, a lot of things to go still, but I think things are moving in a good direction so far.
John, it was great to talk to you as always. Have a great weekend. We'll do it again next week.
You too. We will figure out the Leafs problems next time around. Okay?
Oh, trust me, we will not have the Leafs problems figured out by next week. Maybe 2020 we'll be ready to figure it out. Take care, John.
Sounds great, Jeff. You too. Thanks.
All righty. That's John Paul Morosi. He is the national baseball writer for Fox Sports, joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Omar Minaya is a special advisor to Executive Director Tony Clark, the Executive Director of the Major League Baseball Players Association. Of course, Omar Minaya, formerly New York Mets and Montreal Expos general manager, as well as most recently senior vice president of the San Diego Padres. An interesting move, to say the least. We don't often see club executives moving into a union leadership position. Omar Minaya joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Omar, thanks a lot for doing this. Congratulations.
Great to be with you, Jeff. Great to be part of baseball conversation. Right here in the middle of winter is always great.
Yeah, good to talk again. Talk to me a little bit about this move, because we don't often see club executives move into a union leadership position.
No, you don't. And to me, it was just a great opportunity to be part of an organization like the Players Association that has a rich history of great leadership and the things they've done. But really, to be to be able to bring my insight of the game and of over 30 years of whether scouting, coaching, front office experience. So you were talking to the previous guest about the Expos and mm-hmm. Montreal and with the Mets and being general managers of those teams, and to be able to be able to bring that experience to the Players Association and the players. I think it's a challenge, and I'm excited about it.
In conversation with Omar Minaya on the Jeff Blair Show, any concern at all that, essentially, Omar, you're going, not to put it in battle terms, but you're going from one side to the other, I guess would be the way to describe it. Any concerns at all about hard feelings on the other side if you do have to sit down and talk about an issue?
No, not really. I mean, I think that when you've been a general manager, you always have to sit down and talk whether you're doing contract with agents. You're always talking about, different, you have a position, whether it's your management or you have a position where you're for the players, and you try to work those things out. So I am not concerned. And I think that being part of management and being part of general manager, talking to whether it's owners or those kind of things, I think that I like to think that, the goal is always to accomplish what both sides want. And my goal is to be able to do the best that I can for the players and the best that I can for Tony Clark our director.
Omar, you know your way around the commissioner's office pretty well. What type of commissioner do you think Rob Manfred's going to be?
Well, you know, I know Rob many years. I think he's definitely always been a hard worker, energetic, and he has a passion for baseball. And I'm looking forward to working with Tony and alongside Rob. And I think the game continues to change, and Rob is going to try to see some new ideas to make this game better.
Mm. What do you think are the most pressing issues facing the game right now, Omar? There's a lot of talk, obviously, about pace of the game, things of that nature, which obviously the Players Association has to be involved in that. And I would think your involvement in the General Managers Committee probably really would put you in a real strong position there. But what do you see as the biggest issues facing the game?
Well, you know, I'm kind of just being in the job one day.
Mm-hmm. I know, but you...
This is one area that I'll probably like to sit down and Tony let to hear what he thinks are
right.
the greatest issue. And so give me some time, and then I'll be able to have an opinion on what the issues are myself.
One of the things that we do know that there has been a lot of talk about is the possibility of an international draft. And again, I know the Major League Baseball Players Association has to put strategy together for that. But as John Paul Morosi pointed out in my conversation with him, it's pretty hard to find anybody around baseball who's got more experience internationally, knows his way around the game internationally, knows his way around a draft table the way you do. Your personal feeling, is it something that has to be addressed at some point, the possibility of an international draft? And how complicated do you think that would be? Just personally, not as a spokesman for the MLBPA, but personally.
Well, first of all, thank you for, saying those nice things as far as, understanding the international part of the game because of all those years of scouting and being all over the world. As far as the part about the international draft is something that has been discussed for many, many years. I remember in 2002, after the 2002 agreement, where it was tabled and there was a committee put together. That guy happened to be part of the management committee at that time to discuss the subject of international draft. With at that time with the union,
mm-hmm.
In those days I remember the things that were the administration part of those was a concern back then. A lot of the talk of international draft has been in dialogue between union and management for many, many years. And, my guess is that it'll continue to be talked about. As far as my personal. I think that's one that right now I'd rather hold that to myself.
Okay.
Like anything else in this position, but there's no doubt there's always been talk of international draft.
Omar, what do you know about players now? Now you're going into this role with the Major League Baseball Players Association. Have your views changed from when you first got into the game or when you first became a general manager? Your view about players and the Players Association and the relationship with players? Because you've always struck me as a pretty progressive guy when it came to relations with the Players Association. Have your views changed at all?
No, not at all. I've always... I think I've always been one to really appreciate and respect the players. And I was taught early on that, what makes this game special is the players. The players, people come. And remember, Jeff, those years in Montreal, it was a very unique situation back then. It was a team that was run by Major League Baseball. The play was, especially that 2002 years, a very difficult year because mm-hmm. it was in the middle of a negotiation. Two teams were going to get contracted. And those players were needed to be treated with special respect, and they need to be major league. And Frank Robinson did a great job. That whole staff that's there, those friends of ours over the years from the front office, from the Claude DeLorme of the world. But I've always felt that, it's a special gift to be a baseball player. It's something that is you can do forever. But I've always felt that players are look, when the stadiums get filled, it's because the reality is the players they create these. They bring these, you know, memories for lifetime memories of while playing. So to me, I've always felt that, you know, the players always have to be, you know, highlighted, and the fans love the players, and these are, you know, I always felt that. Look, yes, you work as a front office person, but the star of the show, the ones that bring the fans, and what makes this game special, is the talent of the baseball players.
Omar Minaya is special advisor to Tony Clark with the Major League Baseball Players Association. He is former general manager of the Expos and the New York Mets. Montreal is kind of back in the picture a little bit as far as baseball goes. There's exhibition games being played there. There's a little bit of, I don't know if I'd call it a groundswell by any stretch, Omar, but they're certainly talking about putting together an ownership group in Montreal, maybe getting a stadium built. Rob Manfred has talked positively about the chance at some point down the road of Montreal at least being a candidate for baseball again. You were the general manager there. Do you think there might come a day where we'll see Major League Baseball back in Montreal?
Well, I know that they had a great turnout this past spring. I don't know if you were part of it. I would have loved to have been part of it, but I thought that what I heard was a great turnout, and I believe this. My years there, and you know, the passion of the fan is there. We've had a great time there. Tony Tavares, myself, Frank, it was a true fan base, and I was fortunate enough to see that place. Not only at the back end where I was a general manager, I was there to see that 94 team.
Right.
I was there to see those years and how much love of baseball is in that town. And it's a big town. And all of my memories and what I think of Montreal as far as they love baseball and they know baseball and they're passionate about baseball. And what's going to happen in the future, we don't know. But all I can tell you, if anybody was to ask me, they're asking the right guy about it.
Listen, Omar, we appreciate you joining us today. Lots of success in your new job. Congratulations on it, and best to you and yours and your family.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you out there this summer, and it's great. Keep up the great work.
All right, man. You be well. That's Omar Minaya. He is now the special advisor to Tony Clark, the executive director of the Major League Baseball Players Association. Omar was the last general manager of the Montreal Expos. And formerly general manager of the New York Mets, senior VP of the San Diego Padres most recently. And as GM of the Expos, he was the guy that made the Bartolo Colon trade for Brandon Phillips, Bombaugh, Cliff Lee, and brain cramp, Grady Sizemore. The Expos had a shot at it that year. Omar Minaya thought they did anyhow, so he really went for it and got Bartolo Colon to take a shot at it. And it's great talking to Omar Minaya. He's going to be a tremendous asset to Tony Clark. And, I mean, not I want to get inside baseball here, but one thing you do have to keep in mind is one of the reasons that baseball's had a pretty good period of growth has been the fact that there's been labor peace for a long time. And the guys involved in generating that labor peace, Bud Selig, Donald Fehr, Gene Orza, Rob Manfred, they're either out of the game or in different positions. Michael Wiener, the late Michael Wiener, terrific labor lawyer, terrific negotiator. He passed away a couple of years ago. Tony Clark has replaced him. So you've got a whole bunch of new personalities involved in labor negotiations when the negotiations start all over again. So it's for those of us who love the game, for those of us who like the game, there's a vested interest in seeing that these guys all get along and in kind of figuring out where the various alliances and various strengths are going to lie. And I think Omar Minaya is going to be a terrific asset, not just to the Players Association, but because he essentially worked for Bud Selig and worked for Rob Manfred for a while, I think he's going to be a perfect conduit to the commissioner's office, because we all know when you're doing negotiating, quite often the stuff gets accomplished behind the scenes. Quite often it's the back channel talks that do a lot of the business, and Omar Minaya is going to be front and center. And that's the case. The Toronto Raptors play the Brooklyn Nets tonight in Brooklyn. Tomorrow, big game against the Washington Wizards. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Sportsnet 360. Michael Lee is a national basketball writer for the Washington Post. Michael Lee will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
We're going to have a whole hour of Super Bowl talk at 11 o'clock. Jory Mittelstadt, host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net, will join us at 11 bells. Arash Madani, our reporter on the scene, he will be along as we discuss the week in media, the Super Bowl. I think he'd probably feel like less of a human being spending all that time around people like Marshawn Lynch. But anyhow, we'll talk to Arash about that. Glenn Mills is the head coach of the Essex Ravens football team. He was Luke Wilson's high school coach. Luke Wilson will be in the Super Bowl with the Seahawks. And according to Bet the Greek, he is 6,000 to 1 to be named Super Bowl MVP. The Toronto Raptors have rediscovered their winning ways. Clearly, sort of getting back to full speed now that DeMar DeRozan is up and running, is healthy, has got more of his game back. They'll play the Brooklyn Nets tonight in Brooklyn, then go to Washington tomorrow night to play the Wizards in a game that a lot of us have been kind of looking forward to for a while. The Atlanta Hawks are just running roughshod over everybody, but I think for a lot of us viewed the Eastern Conference thusly. At least I did. I thought Chicago, Cleveland would be the two teams ahead of everybody else. I thought Miami, Atlanta, Washington, and Toronto would be kind of in a group jockeying. Because in a lot of ways, the Wizards and Hawks are sort of where the Raptors are. The Wizards may have been a little ahead of the Raptors going into the year. So any matchup between the Raptors and the Wizards, I think, is telling when it comes to trying to figure out where exactly the Raptors are in the grand order of the Eastern Conference. Michael Lee is a national basketball writer for the Washington Post. You can follow him on Twitter. His Twitter handle is at Mr. Michael Lee, and Michael Lee joins the Jeff Blair Show. Michael, thanks so much for doing this morning.
No, thanks for having me on.
How impressed have you been by the depth of this Wizards team? You know, they've got a lot of top end talent, obviously, but sometimes I think a lot of people kind of look at the Wizards, and you know, in Toronto we talk about the great depth Toronto has and the good bench that Toronto has, et cetera, et cetera. But the Wizards, in their own right, have shown a certain amount of depth, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's been critical to have, you know, depth up front. You know, that's been one of the things they addressed, because they know that they had to count on not having a Nay around for a full season. He's been mostly healthy. He's missed 8 games this year so far, but adding Chris Humphreys has been a huge pickup, because he's just somebody that's come in and just, he hasn't tried to play outside of himself. He just gives them solid production, rebounding, hustle, exactly what they need. And then, you know, you just add all those pieces. Kevin Serafin's kind of coming to his own this year as a backup off the bench. And Rasul Butler, I mean, he's been one of the best bargain bin pickups of the entire offseason. The guy who barely made the roster but is coming in averaging close to 10 points and is their best three-point shooter. So they've done a good job in just adding pieces to what they already had, because, you know, going through the second round last year and feeling that they should have defeated the Indiana Pacers, it really changed their perspective about what they could be as a franchise. And I think you can see a light really went off in John Wall's head, as well as what this team could potentially be.
Yeah, when I look at that team, you know, you talk about the light going off in John Wall's head. I think people in Toronto will say same thing with Kyle Lowry. And the same thing, certainly the Wizards won a series, and you're right, we're very competitive against Indiana. Toronto didn't win their first round. But I think, like Washington, it was kind of a realization for this franchise and this group of players, a realization of just where they are exactly, how close they are. And it really is, especially in the NBA right now, especially in this conference, because there's so much in transition. It's really, it was really a good time for the Wizards and the Raptors to do what they did. People are going to laugh and say, well, how can it ever be a bad time to win a playoff series or take a team to seven? But the steps that the Wizards and the Raptors took last year, Michael, it was a perfect time for those steps to be made, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, because if you look around the league, you know, things just aren't as etched in stone as we once remembered, you know, because there's been so much transition. There have been so many teams that have been building towards this moment on each coast. You know, the Golden State out west, Memphis, and, you know, Portland, those teams, I don't think everybody had those three as their top three going into the season. Houston's obviously been building. But I just think overall, there's a lot of opening. You know, the Heat, you know, broke up, you know, just at the time when, you know, Atlanta, now Washington is rising. Obviously, the Atlantic division is just dreadful. So some team has to emerge out of there. You know, you hope, and Toronto's kind of been right there at the right time to move up. So it's just a changing of the guard in the NBA. There's a lot of parity around, and I think that, you know, we kind of are moving into this era that maybe moving into this era where maybe the dynasty is over, and or it's going to be just open season for anybody to claim a title, where, you know, you can just look around and just see, you know, it's all about matchups, who matches up great. Because I don't know if there's, like, a great team.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that every team has a team that they struggle against. And if they get in the playoff matchup, that could change everything. Like, last year, I think the Raptors should really be upset with the Nets because the Nets just basically folded at the end of the year so they could get the Raptors in the first round. But if they had wound up getting the Wizards, who knows? Toronto may have won that series, and they may be looking at things a lot differently as well. So it's such a wide open league right now. It's tough to really say that this team's for real and this team's not, because you just never know who they're going to wind up facing in the playoffs, and that could just change everything really quick.
Michael Lee's a national basketball writer for the Washington Post. Michael Lee, just got a few minutes left. The NBA All-Star reserves were announced. Three Hawks made it. That's good. Made the East squad. DeMarcus Cousins and Damian Lillard didn't make the West. Clearly, they feel snubbed. How do you look at the reserves? And I mean, you're never going to keep everybody happy in the NBA All-Star game, but DeMarcus Cousins and Damian Lillard, I mean, I had them down on my list.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you can't make everybody happy. There's so many great teams. I mean, Mike Conley can make an argument for his All-Star bid. Zach Randolph can do the same. I mean,
mm-hmm.
The impact he's had on that Memphis squad. So you can go down the list and you can find a number of players on each side who have legitimate arguments. And who knows what Adam Silver decides to do with that last pick. You know, if he picks Lillard or Cousins today or this weekend, you know, one of those guys is going to get a chance. But, I mean, you know, I know a lot of people are upset that Kevin Durant made it in, but he's Kevin Durant. You know,
yeah.
He's the MVP. He's earned the right to get into an All-Star game no matter how many games he's played. And if you look at the numbers that Russell Westbrook has put up this year, you know, he's leading all point guards in player efficiency rating. He just had 40 in the loss against the Knicks, but no one can say he's not an All-Star. So it's subjective. I mean, you can make a case for a lot of people, but I love the fact that there are so many good players that we can sit around and be upset about it, because that says something about the quality of the league and the depth of talent in the league right now.
Michael, it's good of you to join us. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care. That's Michael Lee. He is the national basketball writer for the Washington Post. Follow him on Twitter at Mr. Michael Lee. Always like it when people put Mr. in front of their names on Twitter. I was thinking of putting Mr. Jeff Blair, but as I always tell people, the only people who call me Mr. Blair are my wife and daughter. So the Raptors will play the Brooklyn Nets tonight, tomorrow. Tomorrow night, they will be playing the Washington Wizards, a big matchup. We will have it on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith and Paul Jones will have the radio call of the game. You can catch it on 360. Matt Devlin and Leo Routens providing the TV coverage as the Raptors go up against the Wizards. And let's see. Let's see Terrence Ross. Let's see what Terrence Ross brings to the table against Paul Pierce. Of course, Paul Pierce had his way with Terrence Ross in the playoffs last year. You remember the Raptors' first game against the Wizards this year in Toronto, and how Terrence Ross really went to town on Paul Pierce. It'll be a fascinating matchup to see. And we'll get a sense of how, frankly, we'll get a sense of how far back the Raptors are tomorrow night against the Washington Wizards. We'll get a sense of how far back they are to being their old selves, what with DeMar DeRozan healthy. Again, the Washington Wizards, a pretty good measuring stick for this team. The Super Bowl is Sunday. You know that, of course. And Jory Mittelstadt is host of The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net. You can hear it Sunday from 10 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 590. The Fan. Jory Mittelstadt's going to join us. We'll get you set some prop bets, talk about the Super Bowl as well with Arash Madani of Sportsnet, who's on the scene. And Glenn Mills, head coach of the Essex Ravens football team. Luke Wilson's high school coach. He'll be along at 11:40. Going to talk a little Super Bowl when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.